This is An Episode with Deer, a part of an archive broadcast, Nature of Things, from May 17, 1991.
The Field of Forest Trail is in many ways the most remote and untrammeled of all the trails at Baltimore Woods. It is probably the least used of the trails there. It winds through acres of woods and former croplands, given to Centers for Nature Education by the descendants of Levi Parsons. Its 36 acres were originally about three-quarters cropland and one-quarter beech, maple, and hemlock forest. Today, that acreage ratio is reversed. The 10 acres or less not given over to shrubs and trees is kept open by a rotational mowing schedule. This maintains an area which is favored by bluebirds, tree swallows, field sparrows, song sparrows, and other open-field birds, along with meadow vole, cottontail, white-tailed deer, and a variety of insects. The trail starts at the gravel bed, which is directly west of the lower northern entrance to Bishop Hill Road. It winds through former pasture land and hay fields, now overgrown with shrubs and pole-sized trees, before entering the 8-acre sugar bush in the northwest quarter of the property. A timber stand improvement cutting was undertaken there about 10 years ago, so it is now a handsome forest of tall, straight maples, with some interspersion of cherry, basswood, ash, and beech. The trail winds through this woodlot, traversing beds of spring beauty, trillium, toothwort, and Dutchman's breeches in early spring, followed by mandrake, false Solomon seal, and snake root as the season progresses. The trail then exits the woodland and winds through the open fields, finally following a broad band of second-growth hardwoods back to the point of beginning. The wooded portion of the property has expanded greatly over the three or four decades since it was last farmed. These younger wooded portions, formerly pasture and hay fields, penetrate to more mature woods in several isolated tongues. All but a few of the trees are less than 8 inches in diameter, and the forest floor, instead of being covered with spring flowers, supports scattered growths of ferns and composites. Even so, Seymour Parsons' account of mowing the steep slope vales is surprising. As Seymour put it, "I had to make sure that cutter bar was pointing uphill, or I might have turned over." An account of one walk through these varied acreages might help to describe its bounty. I start out at the parking lot and take the old farm road that climbs the slope. This shortcuts the trail, giving immediate access to the open fields. There I see a field sparrow, a song sparrow, several agitated robins, an immature male oriole, and a patrolling tree swallow. No sign of the bluebirds I had hoped to encounter. Across the property line in Dick Phillips Pond, a drake mallard floats lazily. No doubt his dam is incubating a clutch of eggs nearby. I enter the woods, enjoying the remnants of trillium and spring beauty, and checking in clumps of mandrake for waxy white blooms. They're still all in bud. About halfway through the woods, I surprise a group of deer, including a large doe and two yearlings. I see two other moving forms, but lose sight of them immediately in the undergrowth. The deer show their flags and move on along the trail about 100 yards, then, curiously, turn and regard me anxiously. I train my binoculars on them, trying not to move a muscle. They continue to regard me nervously. The yearlings are completely exposed, so I have an excellent view of them. Both are facing away from me, but have turned their heads and are staring fixedly at me. The nearer one is a young doe, the other a buck, whose velvet-covered knobs show promise of a 4-point or 6-point antlers by fall. The larger deer is standing in back of some light screening undergrowth, about 350 feet away. She is facing in the same direction as the others, but only occasionally looks my way. She blends so well with the leaf-covered forest floor that I would probably not have found her if I didn't have the binoculars. The yearlings continue to look my way, and then the young doe turns and advances toward me, following the curve of the trail. The buck follows, too, after a brief pause. Neither of them has allowed their eyes to stray from me during this whole episode. I note that the bigger doe has started to walk or work her way slowly northward. The buck soon turns and joins her, but the young doe is still rooted in place, looking at me. All of this strange behavior suggests to me that a fawn or perhaps two are nearby. I finally moved to the left toward the spot where I first saw the deer. Perhaps a fawn or fawns dropped down immediately. With luck, I might find one. As I scour the forest floor, I hear a loud ho from the direction of the deer. The sound appears to be created by expelled air. It is repeated a number of times. By now, the young doe has joined the others. Still, it is the nature as a mature doe that is calling. I can see the slight heaving of her sides as she expels the air. I exit without locating the fawns, remembering that last year, under similar circumstances, a doe trying to distract me, I had blundered upon a fawn, almost stepping on it before it moved. This time I won't be so lucky. My departure avoids complicating the deer's lies. Now, that's all I have for today. This is John Weeks saying thanks for listening. Tune in next week and keep it natural.